This is an oral history interview in the Black Heritage in the Upper Piedmont series. The interview is taking place on July 30, 1991, in the home of the interviewee in Clemson, South Carolina. The interviewer is W.J. Meganson. Let me ask first your name.
My name is Anna Louise Wilkes Reed.
Okay, and your house is located at?
210 Butler Street, Clemson.
Anna was the assistant director for our Black Heritage Project and did a wonderful job in lots of different roles, including lining up people to be interviewed. And somehow we passed her up at the time, partly because she was so busy doing things for other people, but also we were focusing on older people and people who are native to the area and neglected lots of very, very good things that you have to say. So I hope we can tackle some of those today. Usually we start pretty far back, like you and your parents and grandparents, and we'll come back to that a little bit later. But since you're not from this area, first, where were you born?
Westminster, South Carolina.
And when were you born?
In 1923, June 4, 1923.
You sit on the farm, so you were outside the town itself.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. How did you wind up in Clemson?
Well, I, there, we had school there, but our school and grandfather was in the ninth grade. And it was only 11th grade. They hadn't added on 12th grade then. So you had to go out of town to get your 10th grade, get your high school education. And I came to Seneca to get my 10th grade. And after that, I went to a little private school in Rock Hill, South Carolina. And it was a two-year college, and it was high school and two-year college.
What was its name?
It was Friendship Junior College. And I met my husband there. Mm-hmm. Lawrence Reed, he was there, and the only way we could get there was by train. We had no car, and we went by train, and when I'd come home, when school was out, we'd come home together on the train.
How convenient.
Yeah, and he got off at Clemson, and I went on to Westminster. So we started dating, and he graduated a year ahead of me, and then the next year, I graduated, and we dated for several months, and then we got married.
When did you marry?
We got married at his mother's house. I eloped. Mm-hmm. My parents weren't ready for me to get married. You know, we lived on a farm, and they wanted everybody there to help farm, you know. So one Sunday, he came. He had already proposed to me, and he said, "Today will be a good day for us to get married." But my parents had gone off that day. They had gone to Georgia to get some peaches. So he had a car, and we came back down to his mother's house. And the minister was having a sermon at the church at Golden View. And so somehow, I don't know how we did it, but anyway, the minister came down to his mother's house, I guess to eat dinner maybe. And we got married in the living room.
What was the date?
October 12th, the 12th of October.
And what year?
In 1941 or two. 1942 is when we got married. Yeah, it's been a while, 1942.
Do you remember the minister's name?
Reverend Collins. Mm-hmm. He's dead now. Mm-hmm. Reverend Collins. I can't think of his first name.
And where then was your mother-in-law's house?
Right there on the corner. There, they remodeled. We did that one right on the corner there. They have the green siding on.
That's the house on the corner of Church Street opposite
right.
Golden View.
Right. And the house was 100 years old. My nephew moved back here from New York City and remodeled it and everything after everybody had died. And so that's where we got married, that place right there. And I had on a skirt and a blouse. I really didn't, you know, I wished I had done. I think about it now that my mother would have liked to have you know, had a church wedding for me. But I don't regret it, you know.
How did you go about letting them know you eloped and married?
Well, I was afraid to come back home that afternoon. So he came back that afternoon, and he came back with me, and I think his sister came back with us, too. And and I said, Mama, guess what? She said, I said, we got married today. And first thing my daddy said, well, I want to see some license. So my husband pulled out the license and showed him that we had gotten married. And so Mama said, well, I wish you had let us know. She said, so some of us could have been there. But it was nobody there but just us, the two of us and his mother and his father and the minister. We got married in the living room. So I gathered up some clothes, some things, and came back to his mother and father's house, right down on the corner, and that's where we stayed. And in May, when did the bomb Pearl Harbor?
That was December 1941.
Okay. Well, it was 41 then when we got married, 41. Because right after that, he went into the Army. He was called into the Armed Services. And he came to Camp Kilmer, New Jersey. And then later on, he sent for me and I went. And I stayed in New York with his sister, Sarah. And I got a job working with Eastern Amplifier, where they made amplifiers for Emerson Radio. And it was called a defense plant. And I worked there until he stayed in Army 5 years. And he was stationed at ports of embarkation where they brought the wounded soldiers in. It was at Camp Kilmer. One was at Taunton, Massachusetts. And one was in West Virginia. And he was stationed at those three ports.
So he didn't have to go overseas?
No, he never went overseas.
Did he work with the wounded?
Right. It was called the medical corps that he was in. So after that, when they had V-Day, it's when he was discharged and came home. And then my baby was born. I had a baby.
Did your husband have any particular training for the medical corps?
No.
Ahead of time, or is that just where they assigned him?
I think that's just where they assigned him. He had no training in it because... at that time, because he hadn't worked many places, you know, he just only had graduated from college about that time.
Where did you live in New York?
In the Bronx, right off of Home Street. And I tell you what's so interesting about it, there was a Morrison High School there, and Powell, you know, that's the... Chief of, what is he?
Chief Justice.
No, for the armed forces.
Oh, General Powell.
General Powell. Well, that's the school he attended, right on that corner there. It was a big school right there, and we were in an apartment parallel to to Morrison High School.
You mentioned living with your husband's sister,
Sarah
Kibler.
Mm-hmm. Sarah Kibler. Mm-hmm.
What was she doing up there?
Sarah was a nurse. She worked at Woman's Hospital. And that's where my baby was born, at Woman's Hospital.
Had she already been there, or did she go up because of the war?
She had already been there. Sarah left there, left here when she was about, I guess, 17 or 16 years old. And she had been there several years. And she and her husband lived on, it was called Home Street, 227 Home Street. Right off Boston Road, the highway that you go into Boston on, in the Bronx.
There must have been many other women doing some of the same type of work you were because of the war.
Right, several people who were, and there are a lot of people who migrated from the South to go there to get jobs, because there were no jobs here, if you didn't do domestic work. You weren't a teacher or a preacher.
In the factory where you worked, I presume almost all the employees at that time were women during the war.
Just about, except supervisors.
primarily black or white or both?
They were both black and white working. A lot of Hispanics, but there were more white than there were blacks.
Was there any segregation within the plant so that whites worked on one line and it was totally integrated?
No, it was totally integrated. Because I worked on an assembly line, and at the it started off putting the boards together, and at the end, I was the one who put the last board in and put it into the radio.
Were these then being used for the Army?
Yes, they were. Mm-hmm.
Was this your first experience working in that type of integrated setting?
It was the first time I had ever worked in that type of integrated setting.
What did it feel like?
It wasn't strange to me. Everybody was nice to me, and I'm not, I'm easy to meet strangers, you know, and wasn't anything. And I had lived on a farm where our neighbors were all white. I remember walking to school. We had to walk about 2 miles. The white kids rode buses. And this family who lived on a farm near us, they had moved there from Iowa or somewhere. Anyway, they were Barretts. I mean, Grace and Charles and Robert Barrett. And they walked to school with us. We went to different schools, of course. But we walked to school together in the mornings.
How was your pay at General Electric?
We got paid every 10 days. We got paid. And it was, at that time, let's see what I made. I guess I was making about $50 or more. But we got a check. We were paid by check.
Did you and your sister-in-law live in a black neighborhood in the Bronx?
No, we had Jewish neighbors. And then above us was a Jewish family. And I remember them cooking gefilte fish on Saturdays. And there were two girls about my age, and the parents were older. And right across the street from us was a Jewish synagogue.
Did you go to church in the Bronx?
Yeah, I went to a little church. It was I first started going to a Catholic church because that was right down the street from me and I could walk there. But then later on, Sarah's husband had joined a church where Adam Clayton Powell was minister.
That was Abyssinian Baptist.
Uh-huh, Abyssinian Baptist. And that's where he was a member. So I joined under watch care there, but that was not in the Bronx. We had to ride across town to that.
The time I was at Abyssinian, it was fairly clear that large numbers of their members had come from North and South Carolina, yeah, and they continue to cultivate, right, the roots. Was living in New York City an exciting change after, yeah, small town South Carolina?
Different running. It was a rat race. I remember going to work, and I'd get up in plenty of time, but I had to catch a trolley car on Boston Road to ride down to 149th Street to get my subway to go to work. And I remember racing, and I fell going down the hill running to try to catch my trolley car. And this man said, "Lady," he said, "if you leave home a little bit earlier," said, "try leaving home a little bit early in the morning so you can avoid this." But it was quite an experience for me. I had never been on a subway or a trolley car, and not many buses really, because I was say like 17, 18 years old.
One of the photographs that we duplicated last summer is one of a black woman entertainer from Atlanta, Georgia Peach.
Right.
The photograph was sold in a entertainment club somewhere in New York City during World War II. Did you ever either run into her or other black entertainers there?
No, but I went to several, like when there was, what's his name, Cab Calloway. He was always at a little place downtown called the Savoy. And we'd go down there on Sunday afternoons, and Lena Horne, and I saw them all in person.
Had you ever seen or heard any of these black entertainers in South Carolina?
Yeah, that was one. They had a band. Before I left to go to New York to stay, there was a little band, and they called him. His name was Cootie Williams. And he was from down no part of the state, somewhere down there. And that was a, we call it Recreation Dale, and that place used to be an old schoolhouse below the church. It's not there now. It's torn down. But he used to come there and put on entertainments on holidays. And his name was Cootie Williams, and he had a band. But now that's about the only one, you know, that I've seen here.
Was Little John's Cafe open that early?
It was open then. We used to go up there for breakfast. They'd have, they call breakfast dances on Christmas and holidays. And we used to go to that. And I know my father-in-law used to think it was awful that we stayed up half the night to go up to Little John Grill to eat breakfast.
Well, they used to have entertainers, too, I think.
Yeah, they had entertainers. But I don't know. I guess it's my upbringing. We didn't go to entertainments like that, you know, dances and things like that. And I learned to dance after I went to school. I learned to dance.
Was that at Rock Hill?
Yeah, Rock Hill.
I can't imagine you're doing that at Seneca
Park. I know. I learned to dance and play cards because we weren't allowed to do that, you know.
Well, your mother sounds a lot like my grandmother, I think. After World War II was over, did you and your husband return to Clemson?
Right. Lawrence worked, after he was out of the Army for about a year, I guess, and he worked at I forgot now what the place was called. But anyway, they made, like, decals for refrigerators and things like that. He worked at a place where they made refrigerators. And that was in the Bronx. He could walk to work. He walked to his work. Then I got pregnant. I think it was right about that time, because Amelia was born in 1948. And so when she was about a year old, we came back to Clemson. And we bought a little house that my father-in-law owned. And it had four rooms, no bath. And we had a bathroom added on to it, and another room added on to the little house. The house is gone now. It was right down there where the Ramada Inn is now, mm-hmm. in that area, right in that area.
Just about on 123?
Yeah, almost on 123. And so we sold it after so long time. We sold it. We outgrew it, I guess. And we bought this spot up here and built this house.
Your house is on Butler Street.
Butler Street.
Was this the first house on this particular site?
No, I don't think so. I think this is right here because the school, there used to be a house up there. When I came here, there was a school, an all-black school, where the school is now. This was all woods here, wooded area here.
So you had the site cleared and the house
built. Right, just this was all woods.
About when was your house built?
And 1960. 1962, because Anita was still in high school.
It would have been, I presume, one of the nicest houses and one of the relatively few brick houses in the black neighborhood.
Yeah, except that one on the corner down here, it was you know, when you turn the corner, mm-hmm. that one was always brick. Mrs. Francis Towns lived there. But this was the next brick house that was built.
And yours is considerably larger and more modern than that.
Yeah.
It must have been the showplace of the time.
Well.
Were you and your husband the socialite entertainers of the area?
We had lots of parties and things there, because we both had lots of friends.
What did each of you do when you returned to Clemson?
When I came back, it was hard for me to find a job then. That I thought, you know, that I wanted, that I liked. And so when I first came back, I started working at the, I worked at the laundry for a while. And then I'll never forget Bernice Hope.
Let me stop you just a second. Do you have any idea what you were making at the laundry?
I think about $30, maybe $40 a month.
And that would have been around 1950, shortly after mm-hmm. you came back. Okay, go ahead about Bernice.
And Bernice, you know, she's always been active in civil rights and stuff like that. So there was a lady who ran Harper's Five and Ten Cents Store, I can think of Rubenelle, somebody. Rubenelle Bradley or Bradford or whatever. Anyway, she was supervisor of Harper's Five and Ten. Bernice and I had become friends because we had, at that time, they were talking about integration, you know, it was really talked about then in 54. And so she said, Anna, why don't you put an application down at Harper's Five and Ten? They don't have any blacks working there. Really, blacks weren't working in anything then but the laundry and the dining hall at Clemson. And so I went and she interviewed me, and to my surprise, she hired me as a sales clerk. So I worked there, I guess maybe about two years. And one day...
Let me stop before we go a step further. How did both white and black customers respond to having a black sales clerk?
Well, I had no problems at all. I really didn't. A lot of people came in just to see if I knew how. I could count. A lot of people did. And you'd be surprised at what you learn and stuff like that. But among one of the wealthiest men at Clemson would come in, like, and then he, little thing like a screwdriver or something like that, he didn't pay for it. He'd pick it up, just go on out and store with it. And I reported it to her. I said, you know, he didn't pay for that. But I said, well, he's been doing that. He does that, stuff like that. And she let him get away with it. I guess he never get things so big, you know, that she... But you'd be surprised to know who it was if I told you, but I'm not going to say.
Were the black people in the area amazed that you were able to get such a job?
Yeah, they were, and a lot of them came. And then after that, there were two or three that came in to apply for a job. But it wasn't a big store. It was just the Harper's 5 and 10. Wasn't a big store, but it was the shopping place for most people because that was the only one in the area at that time, except Hoke's Lawn up on the corner. And Lawrence worked at, when he first came out, he got a job at the university, and he was the one who set up the inner office mail thing. And he was a carrier for a while, and then on by himself, and then after that, they gave him an office. And he had four or five young men working with him, and they did the inner office mail for Clemson University, and then they got a real post office, and so he worked there until he retired. And
do you remember what he was making?
Starting off, he was making about $75 a month.
So he was making considerably more working at the university than you were at Harper's.
Right. So, and after that, Bernice Hope knew Flo Sharp. You might know Sharp, Flo Sharp. Her mother lived out there, and they used to call her Aunt Mamie. On the old Central Road, going into the Central.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Flo worked for the federal government in Serene on the campus. And two of her daughters worked at Harper's with me. And Jan came in one day and she said, Anna, she said, my mother said, would you like to have a federal job, a civil service job? And I said, sure. She said, well, she's going to send you an application to fill out. And she said, and if you fill it out, she said, because they had begun to say that they needed somebody black in the organization, or else they'd lose some funds. So she brought me the application, and I brought it home that night, and I filled it out, and then I mailed it back in to Mr. Burley. He was the boss at that time, and so I got a hearing back. He told me to report to him. In 2 weeks. So I told him I need to give her 2 weeks' notice. And so I did. And she fired me. So we got paid on Saturdays when I leave her, but she paid us a little envelope with our money in it. And she said, Anna, she said, I want you to wait a few minutes. So I did. I stepped out of line and I waited. And I got to the back of the line. And she said, so you're going to leave? And I said, not until next week. She said, no, you're going to go. I'm letting you go today. So she was angry because I left. So I told Mr. Barrett, I said, Mr. Barrett, I said, I know I'm not supposed to report to work the next week or so. I said, but I got fired. And he said, oh, that's why I didn't get an answer from her. So he said, well, I tell you what. He said, you come on in anyway. And so that Monday, I went in. I think it was in September when I went to work there. Let's see, it must have been 66. Yeah, it was in 66 because my mother was living with me then, 1966. And I started working then. I worked until I retired in 80. I retired in 83.
So you worked there about 17 years?
18.
Mm-hmm. What specific office were you working in?
It was the market quality research. We worked with cotton. And we did the fineness of the cotton, the chemistry part that has sugar in it, and we did the analysis. And I was in the lab. I was considered a laboratory technician. At first, it was called a physical science aide, and we had computerized machinery. You do a sample of cotton, you get the length, and it was a printout. You get it out, and then we recorded it. And we set the standards for the mills in all the areas when they bought a bale of cotton. We take a small sample, and they could determine how long it was, how strong it was, and all that. And then we send the results to the mill, and they'd buy the bale of cotton like that. But we only had a sample of it.
Do you remember what you were making when you were hired?
Yes,
in this office?
I remember well that I had made, and this girl who worked in the office with me, that dough to hold of my, she said, Anna, when you get your first check, bring it back by here and let her cash it for you to see how much you're making. I think they started me off with $1,200 a year. $12,000. I started off at $12,000. Then I went from GS2. I went in as a GS2. Then I went up to GS6. And when I left, I was making $22,000.
A bit more than at Harper's.
I bet anybody would make that at Harper's.
Who was your supervisor when you started working with USDA?
Oma Smith.
We've talked about her before because she was next door neighbor to Elsie.
Right, Elsie. They were friends. And she had an antique shop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, let's stop and turn the tape over, then continue.